This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Neil. I'm an OTI member. Most of my adult life, I've been sober curious or looking to go AF or doing stints of going alcohol free, but they would never stick. I think the reason they didn't stick was because there was lack of community or peer support. So once I found out about OTI in the community, I had to join straight away. Joining the OTI community has been the best alcohol free decision I've ever made. It's such a fun, safe space to share your alcohol-free wins. There's always someone to give advice or celebrate with you. So if you're sober curious, come and join the fun at OTI. You won't regret it. It's a game changer.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Welcome to Over the Influence. It's a podcast packed with positivity about alcohol-free life. We sing about sobriety from the rooftops and as well share the rubbish bits too. It's all about your stories, your inspirational stories, and we can't wait to get into today's episode with this week's guest. Before we do that, a quick reminder, a quick recap as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley. Everybody calls me Shaz. Live in Lancashire in the northwest of England. Stopped drinking over 4 flipping years ago. And you know what? Best thing I ever did. Who'd have thunk it? Absolutely life-changing stuff. So that's me in a nutshell. I'll quickly add, actually, because people ask me this all the time, Ben. How much did you drink? How bad did it get? I drank too much, too quickly, too often, and it got to minimum bottle of wine a night, more at weekends. So that's a very long story in the nutshell there. Like I said, really looking forward to chatting to our guest who is waiting in the Zoom wings to share his story today. Before we do that, Ben, how are you doing?
I'm tired, Shaz, I'm not going to lie. I'm a new dad to Leo. He's 5 weeks old, 5 weeks and one day.
Amazing.
Today. I'm Ben, I'm 34, I live in Liverpool, and I love being a dad, and I'm very happy to be a sober dad, because they never told me it was this hard and this tiring.
We tried.
I love it.
We tried.
I'm absolutely shattered. In terms of what kind of drinker I was, you know what? The podcast last week with Mandy Manners, Love Sober, she talked about the scale that, is it the World Health Organization use when it comes to kind of identifying drinking? I was a hazardous drinker, and I didn't know that before that episode. But I didn't have a rock bottom with alcohol. I also didn't have a good relationship with alcohol, because obviously I've decided to remove it. I was a classic binge drinker, basically, where I'd go out and I'd have no off switch. Sometimes I could go out and that would absolutely be fine. You know, nothing would happen. I'd come home and I'd wake up with a hangover, yeah. But I could kind of deal with that. I'd get some pizza in, I'd sit on the sofa all day and be incredibly unproductive. But then also, I'd go out on other times and it was just completely unpredictable. You know, I'd never know. Like, I'd say something stupid or I'd do something completely out of character. Look, I've decided to completely remove alcohol. That's good for me. And I really like the person that I am. And I tell you what, it's really helping with those 5 o'clock in the morning feeds, not having a hangover.
Can you imagine, Ben? Can you imagine?
Yeah. Honestly, I'm a zombie anyway. Like, imagine if I was a zombie with a hangover.
Oh, no.
No, it'd just be... No. Completely dreadful. So very grateful to be completely alcohol-free for over 2 years.
Amazing. Ben, thank you very, very much. Let's chat to our guest today. He's called Steve Rodriguez. He's from Garstang. And it gives us great pleasure to finally welcome you to the pod, Steve, because I know we've had to rearrange and rejig and rearrange, and here you are. How the heck are you?
I'm doing okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm actually I feel really well today, thank you. Yeah, good.
Excellent, excellent good. Stuff. Steve, you look really well, and I'm chuffed
thank
to
you.
Bits. And I am really glad that you are sharing a really personal and probably a difficult story with us on the podcast today. Ben just made reference there in his introduction about the scale of drinking. Let's start with you and where you were, because it was pretty desperate, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I mean, I Well, for a start, I'd always like to drink. Don't get me wrong. I can't deny that. I've never really thought I was a heavy drinker, but clearly I was. And I think I was often in denial and maybe waiting for that phone call the following day to say, you knew I'd said something wrong, but I probably didn't know just what I said. But in terms of when my drinking got really bad, that was really all done at home. Really, it started off by going, for funny enough, actually, I bumped into a taxi driver today that used to take me into Garstang. And we just got chatting about different things. And I said, well, you saw me probably right at the very start before everything was hidden away. You know, I'd go into Garstang, have a few drinks in Garstang, get my supplies, and then probably get another taxi to another place to get more supplies. But my drinking in earnest lasted, it was really excessive, a good, I would say, 9-10 months of quite excessive drinking. When the main contractor that I work for disposed of my services, I've been in the same trade for 36 years, never had a problem, never had any, but we had a fallout and it was as if everything was closing and they'd obviously made their minds up when they came to see me. I'd been with them for 23 years out of the 36 and that was the worst part, leaving that hotel knowing that really there wasn't really enough work. Because when you're contracting in the trade I was in, you have your main one that pays your mortgage, your rent, and you have maybe three or four others that make up the rest of your money. But that was when I really felt, I remember driving back thinking, well, that's me finished. And I probably, even before then, in all fairness, I've been struggling quite badly with depression and anxiety. I struggled on, when it got to Friday, I was fine. The weekends were a bit of a blur. But come, say, Sunday night and Monday morning, all the sweat started and the nervousness started and I found myself unable to go to work. So the whole thing from start to finish was horrendous. When it was the process starts from, you know, they want you out and you can't quite believe it. Anyway, and that's really when I started. The drinking started at home and it would be perhaps one bottle a day. And then it got to, I used to normally go sometimes up to the golf club, don't play golf, but it was nice because I could walk there. You didn't have to worry about getting in the car. And then I'd come home, have a bottle of wine, and then another. And it got to the point in the end when my drinking was, you know, we talked about being honest right from the start. I would have 3, maybe 4 bottles in a day plus beer because I changed at one point from white to red, thinking that might stop me. And it was just horrendous. I couldn't. I knew right from the beginning that certain days I knew I was doing it, but I couldn't stop. I used to look. I actually still don't look in that mirror. I have a mirror in the ensuite. And I used to look in that mirror sometimes in the morning, like I'm looking at the screen now, and I see my eye. I've been sick probably, and I see my eyes sunken, bloodshot. I see the colour of my skin, probably not shaven. I used to pray. I used to pray to stop. Steve, you've got to stop this. What are you doing? And then maybe have a shower, get shaved, get ready, and think, I'm on with this. And then it started again, and it started again, and it started again.
Steve, you told us there about what when it changed for you, which is awful after so long in an industry and that losing your job led to what was probably social drinking. That's when it became more isolated at home. That the speed in which that happened, it was quite a relatively short space of time, wasn't it? I think, did you say 9-ish months, something like that?
Yeah, 9-10 months, yeah.
I don't know what sort of drinker you were before that, but in that short space of time, it got so severe. You're lucky to be here on this call now.
I am. Obviously, I know that now. When it all happened and I was hospitalised, do you want to jump straight to that, Sharon?
Just talk to us a little bit more, Steve, about those few months, if you're happy to do so.
No,
about,
of course I am, yeah. I mean,
how quickly the levels of drinking ramped up, yeah, and yet you're okay. hiding this. You're doing it in isolation.
Yeah, I did. And the only person, in fact, I was talking to Maureen yesterday, the only person that really knew in earnest what I was like was my neighbour, Maureen. And she is lovely, lovely lady. She calls a spade, don't mess about. And often she used to say to him, what the hell are you doing? Because she was used to seeing me getting up, going out early in the morning, coming home late at night, probably carrying my cases in, I was wearing a smart jacket and shirt and all the rest of it. And she couldn't understand it. And it wasn't opening the post that my business was going completely. I disregarded everything. They couldn't, at one point, they couldn't even get any envelopes. I'm so ashamed. They couldn't get any envelopes into my post trade. We have a, because I live in an apartment block, we have post trade in the entrance. So at one point, the person was complaining because he couldn't get any envelopes into my post trade. Well, I never opened them when I got them out. I remember when I came out of hospital, there were 4 or 5 carrier bags full of envelopes from different people, banks and all the rest of it. I shut everything away. All I was bothered about was getting through the day. And the only way I could get through the day was drink. It's as simple as that. I know it's awful, but it's as simple. When I look back now, and again, when I think about those days when I knew I was doing it and I couldn't stop, And I became very clever in terms of where I used to go and get my supply. But I never really drunk first thing in the morning, strangely enough. I've never done that. I don't like this phrase, do you have them on your cornflakes? I've never liked that because it probably tastes horrible anyway. I've never tried that. But I never really drunk early in the morning. But when it started maybe 11:30, 12 o'clock, because I was still over from the night before, I never got into my car, by the way. I mean, in fact, I think October, November, my car went back anyway. So that probably made it even worse. But I was just trying to get through the day, so I'd have a bottle just to get my confidence or courage, not confidence, courage, and then I'd get that last one to just to obliterate, just to shut everything out. And the only people, perhaps people on the telephone knew when I'd be repeating myself, because I wouldn't text. I learned fairly quickly not to text, because generally when you've had a few drinks, you're not texting, you're not making any sense really, are you? So people have now told me, in fact, a friend was telling me, I think I was showing signs before, he was saying, when we'd go out, he said, Steve, you used to pick up a pint, your hands were shaking. Your hands were physically shaking. He said, you couldn't hold a pint glass with one hand. Of course, I never saw that. People don't always tell you at the time, you know, and people now have said, people are so nice to me now. And they said, God, you look so different. I said, I must have looked awful. They said, yeah, you did, Steve, but we didn't like to say anything. The people, if they don't know you that well, say in the supermarkets and stuff, they're not going to say to you, well, what have you been up to? They might think it, they might talk amongst themselves, but it was all down to me. Nobody forced anything down me. It became a daily routine. That's how I would describe it, a daily routine, getting up and probably towards the end, almost every day, looking in that mirror and begging myself. I used to beg myself to stop, and I couldn't. Couldn't stop.
Steve, you're talking then, and it reminds me of an episode we recorded with a Hollywood movie star, actually, Steve. It reminds me of the episode we did with Sean Weiss, the Mighty Duck. I'm not sure if you've heard that.
Yeah, I'll look it up now.
He talked to us about, for him, his mom died, and he was really, really close to his mom. And he talked about going to the off-license, and that he knew on the way, he had a word with himself, and he said, like, look, if you go and get this bottle now, this is going to be a long road for you. Like, it's only going to go one way. If you, in this moment now, if you give in and go and get a bottle, then this is going to be a long road to recovery. And he had that conversation with himself, but still went to the liquor store and he got that bottle. And it was a long road, an incredibly long road for Sean in terms of his recovery. In fact, his recovery started in a jail cell. Some people who join us on this podcast and tell us their story, it's a slippery slope. We talk about how insidious alcohol can be and how it can kind of creep up on you and bite you on the arse. I was made redundant, and I remember that feeling, and I remember that kind of fuck it response and going to the pub and getting absolutely obliterated. The reason I ask is because obviously, you know, things aren't great in the world at the moment. We've got a war going on. There's a cost of living crisis. We're being told that, you know, we're about to enter into the longest recession on record in the UK. I think this is, you know, losing jobs, losing contracts, this is going to happen to a lot more people. Did you, because it was a kind of a moment that changed how you drank, you know, this thing happened in your life and then you became a at-home drinker, yeah, a solitary drinker. Did you know, like, did you have that kind of conversation in your head, or again, did it just happen like that?
No, I think there'd been, in all fairness, there'd been a lead up to it. My drinking had increased before then because of the way I was feeling. But you, just when you talked about that gentleman there, he's recovering in a prison cell. In many respects, I was in a prison cell, and here in these four walls, this was my prison. I forgot your question again. Sorry, start again.
Did you know it was happening? Like,
yes, I did. And that's the thing. That's the worst. When I look back now, and this is why I think now I'm so far into my recovery and I can see things so, I have no brain fog now. And I want to say to everybody else, if they want to listen, of course, is say, don't do what I did. Find a better way. Try and find something to take your mind off it, because you don't want to go into the living hell that I put myself through and my family and my friends. It's not just me that was affected. Obviously, it's my children, my mum particularly, you know, and all my friends, you know, but it's so easy. I think it is easy to slip into it. And I did. And I did, because once you've had that, because you're topping it, once you're drinking the amount that I was drinking, and I'm ashamed, but there's no point in me talking this evening and saying, well, I just had this or just had that. I may as well tell. I used to sometimes, and I always have that emergency bottle as well. I always have an emergency bottle, like just in case you perhaps not got enough supplies. And I look around in the morning and I think, oh, please tell me I didn't have that or that emergency box. And I pick up the box of wine and I shake the box of wine and thinking, how much is in that? And I'd be like that, thinking, oh, God, no. I think perhaps I put it in the freezer, pull the freezer door open, and there's nothing there. But the shame doesn't last that long, or it didn't for me, because I'd be thinking, right, well, I can't get through this day. It was horrendous, really. It was, of course, it was horrendous, because it nearly killed me. It nearly killed me, and it took my life in January, of course. But it's very easy to slip into it. But I think I sometimes sit on my sofa and like when I talk about this, I see this person and I see it's me, and I'm wanting to tell this person to stop, because I know what exactly is going to become of him if he doesn't stop. But I can't. He won't stop. He won't listen to me. And that's how I see it. But I'm actually getting a new sofa, because I'm sick of sitting on this same sofa. This is true. And seeing the same sofa, the same arm, the same place where I sat, and thinking that's where it all started. That's where I put the wine. That's where I sat, like, that's where I fell asleep.
I think so. I'm actually getting rid. Big deal. I just want to come back to what you said there about shame and stigma and the feeling of embarrassment and everything surrounding alcohol addiction. It's something that we strive week in, week out to hopefully begin to change, and it's sharing stories like yours that plays a massive part in that. When was the shame that you felt replaced by pride? Because as Ben has said on previous episodes, we should be shouting about people's achievements coming back from the brink of something pretty awful, and people should be proud about it. I want to know when the feelings changed for you. And it's not about shame. It's about being really proud of where you are now, Steve.
Yeah, I think for me, when I was in hospital, obviously it was, you know, really low. To get to where the prize started, I had to have that massive fall, really. And, you know, I mean, when you're in hospital and you're lying in what you shouldn't be lying in, and at 57 then, having to wear a nappy and not being able to walk, you're stripped of all your dignity. And I made a promise to the hospital that I would. I said, I promise I'll get better. I still remember the doctor saying to me, don't promise yourself, Steve, promise us. And that's when it really started for me, because I knew then I couldn't look them in the eye I did have to go back because I had a complication, nothing to do with alcohol. Well, it was to do with alcohol, but not drinking it. It was all to do with the liver. But and then when I came out of hospital, looking at myself in the mirror and thinking, no, I've got to stop. And making that decision on that day when I came out, it was the 27th of January, that I know I could never drink again and I would never drink again. And making those decisions and spending more time with my mum and my friends, looked after me. But every day, to be fair, there's so much of the stuff I've done as well. I think it's when also you're feeling better in yourself. Because I was, when I had the first meeting with the British Liver Trust in January 2021, you know, because I was so lost in that first year, I couldn't walk. I was only, in fact, I only got rid of a walking stick this year in March. I mean, that's a big thing for me, having to get rid of that. It became a crutch towards the end, I would say. But of course, I had the arthritis as well. But I think not being able to walk, and I couldn't in that first year, not being able, even if I think back now, but the first time I was able to, I couldn't even dress myself properly, couldn't put my socks on. I was always forgetting, I was always falling. So whether it was a particular day, I think there's certain moments that come back to you. And when somebody now says, I've read your story online, or a friend of mine said, you don't realise that your story is inspired. He was clean a year on Sunday. I never knew. He didn't tell me. He said, I've seen your recovery and it's inspired me to make sure that I, because if you can do it, Steve, I can do it. When somebody will give you a call and say, I've read your story online, and you've changed my life. Because I never considered myself. I'm not, nobody's special. I've always just been me. But I think the pride of being a granddad, which has been fantastic. Layla was born in January last year. You'll know this, Ben, what it's like when you have a child, or hopefully you'll get a grandchild. And when somebody new, a little one, comes into your life, as we talked before, it makes so much of a difference. Because I haven't, Layla and Amy hasn't got to worry about me now. She hasn't got to worry about when I go and see them, or if she comes to see me, what state will I be in? You know what I mean? So there's lots of different things that make me proud, really. My family, my mum, my friends. And just trying to do the right things every day and stopping drinking and making that decision that I knew I had to stop. And it's not easy. And when I tell you what did make me really proud, if I think about it, when I reached 1,000 days recently, and I thought, 1,000 days, I couldn't even go a quarter of a day to reach 1,000 days. I used to count every day. I can't deny that. I don't know if anybody else is the same, but I used to count every day now. And then December the 17th, because I stopped mid-December because I'd had enough. Mum was up and I just had enough. So 17th of December, that'll see me 3 years. 3 years.
And that that's brilliant,
is just, yeah, so just, I want to make other people, I want to make myself, I never take any credit. When I was having my ultrasound last week, the nurse said, you're doing amazing. You're absolutely doing amazing. There's no increase in any problem. You've got nothing, no issue from the ear. And I said, well, I'll just get on with it. She said, you should be really proud. It's okay. But that's what she actually said to me. She said, it's okay that, you know, you're saying, you're thanking everybody else for what they've done for you, but you've still got to do this. And think when other people tell you, you know, especially medical professionals as well, because they don't. I bumped into a nurse. I went back to the ward. That was another proud moment. I went to see the ward. When I had a rheumatology appointment 2 weeks ago, and I'd seen the signs for the Lancaster suite. That was at the Lancaster, the Royal Lancaster Infirmary, Lancaster there. And I thought, I'm going to go. I'd never had the courage. I wrote to them and I sent pictures of Layla and thanked them all for what they did, because they affected, well, they did the same in my life. There's no doubt about that. You know, when Mum was told that after those first 2 or 3 days, I wasn't going to live. That was every day she was going into the hospital thinking that was going to be the last day she'd see me alive. And that is, and my children don't forget as well. They were told the same thing. So I know what they did for me. There was no stigma involved from them. They were just amazing. I thought, I'm going to go. I'm actually going to go and see them. And I remember going down the ramp when there was a nurse coming out, and I said to her, excuse me, is this the Lancaster suite? She said, yeah, yeah. She pulled her mask down and she went, oh my God, Steve. I went, yeah. And she gave me the biggest hug. And she said, oh my God, I can't believe it's you. She said, come in, come in. And there were about five or six nurses that were laid on reception, Lil, she was fantastic. She was brilliant. And she brought all the nurses out and the lady that looked after me that discharged me. They were like, it was very, very emotional.
We are just going to take a very, very quick break from this brilliant chat with Steve. He won't mind me saying this because I've said it to his face many, many times. He can talk. He can talk for England, can our Steve? And you know what? I'm so glad. I'm so glad he's talking because he's got so much to say, Ben. So much so that throughout the course of this episode, we run out of time and we don't get much opportunity at all to talk about the amazing work that Steve does as a volunteer now for the British Liver Trust. It's an organisation that Steve says has absolutely changed his life. And you know, Ben, he gets invited to speak on their behalf. He's across their social media. He's done Love Your Liver roadshows with them. He's so vocal. He's so proud of where he is now. And I think we just need to give a big up yourselves and a big shout out to the British Liver Trust on Steve's behalf.
Yes, because we did feel really bad. I mean, you're right, you can talk. And technically, it was Steve's own fault for not bringing in the British Liver Trust into the conversation sooner. So that's why we feel bad and we're highlighting it here in this middle bit. But he does go on now to talk about HE and liver disease. And actually, I say in a minute about how, you know, we've been doing this podcast for 2.5 years and it's mad that we're still learning so much stuff. But when you think about alcohol and its effect on the liver, I just didn't realise it could have such a massive impact on the brain and kind of cognitive function.
And it's really quite frightening, the impact at that level of severity that it can have. And Steve, you know, as we're hearing in this episode, he will be living with this condition forever, HE, but it's not stopping him in his tracks. He's doing amazing things, as we said, a volunteer now with the British Liver Trust. And if you want any support from them or any further information about what they do, if you look them up on social media, just stick in British Liver Trust or just head to their website, britishlivertrust.org.uk. Now, back to the episode.
Steve, can you tell us then, because obviously you've talked about being on the ward and it's how do you say it?
Yeah, it's okay, it's all right. I struggle to say it, especially with this new tooth in. Hepatic encephalopathy.
Okay.
So
could you explain about liver disease as well?
Yeah, of course I can. Well, hepatic encephalopathy is a condition where the liver has about 500 different functions, most important organ in your body, and it produces toxins it emits from your body, or they're supposed to. So what was going, should go out of my body, wasn't. They were going into my brain. So therefore, that's where, and that is very, very dangerous. There are mild signs. And they're severe, but one I've actually researched quite a lot now, and I've probably ticked every box, and I start showing signs of that fairly early on, certainly in December when Mum was up with the falling, some of the hallucinating. I mean, some of the stories that I can laugh about now. Oh, what you see, what's in your mind, what you see is the reality. Some of it I've been told they're hilarious. I think I can laugh about it now. I remember when my daughter came to see me. Of course, I was in bed. I thought we were outside. I was convinced we were outside on a wrought iron patio set, beautiful black ornate patio set, and that's what it does to you. And obviously, then that's when the body shuts down. When Mum found me, this is leading up to when I went to hospital. I'd gone for a shower and not come back, and Mum came into the bedroom because she stayed. You know what I mean? She stayed after Christmas because she knew there was something not right. And I can still remember this bit. She said, "What's the matter?" So I said, "Well, I was talking to a dog. I can remember a dog. I was sat on the edge of the bed, and in my mind, there was a dog. And it was like a grey dog with a beardy, like a wolfhound type thing. I said, it won't come to me. I said, it's going to have to go." She said, "Why is that?" "Because you'll laugh at this. It's so funny." I said, "Because it's the same cause, the two cows behind me. There were two cows on my bed behind me. I can still picture them. I'm pointing now. I'm actually as if you can see me now pointing. And she said, but because mum was a nurse, she was mum in nurse mode. And I said, what are they doing there? And I can still picture, this is typical of me, three ladies sat on a beautiful, ornate Victoriana dressing table, dressed in Charleston gear. And that's all I remember then, until I came round as well.
It's important to say that that's because of you're not seeing cows and a dog with a beard because you're drunk at that point. That is the liver disease.
Liver disease, yeah. That is caused totally by liver disease, yeah.
And in terms of liver disease, is it purely alcohol that caused that, or did the alcohol not help a pre-existing...
No, alcohol caused that. There was no, I had no pre-existing conditions at all that could affect that. No, mine was purely down to excess alcohol.
That's terrifying, isn't it?
Mm.
It's absolutely, because I think, people listening to this will be much better educated than I am, but I kind of think of the physical, in terms of the kind of, you know, the body shutting down, that kind of, you don't think of affecting the brain almost. I don't know if I'm completely naive by saying that, but that you don't think that liver disease will cause you to hallucinate.
No, well, that's why I'm really keen on telling my story as it is, because I would never have thought of that. You know, I knew I was drinking too, but if I knew that, like I say, if I knew then what I know now, but this is what I want people to understand, how bad it can get. And that's why I'm prepared to tell my story, because I never thought of that when I was sat down in the second and third bottle thinking that I would be able to, I had to walk on a Zimmer frame and I couldn't walk more than 20 yards when I came out of hospital. I couldn't dress myself. I still have problems now with my memory. It can affect that, which is frustrating. And I often find at times, not so much now as it was, that my writing and my spelling can be affected, and you can get frustrated by certain things. But in terms of I did have some other medication which was affecting it, so they took me off those straight away. So I do know now the signs that it can be affected by certain medication as well. But I'm not leaving anything too long now, obviously, like I did before. But yeah, it still does affect me. It'll affect me for life, definitely, but it doesn't affect. I remember being one of the meetings and one of the guys said to me, you know, don't, whatever you do, don't let what you've got define you. And it doesn't. I still do lots of the things that, or some things I never used to do. That's the thing. That's the other thing as well with this condition affecting my brain. It's given me, I've done things that I never, when I joined the community-based arts group, I started off doing a project with them on a Horrocks Mill at Preston. I started off just copying patterns of ladies' dresses, bizarrely enough, researching the mill, the history of the mill. But that's led on to so many things. I've been doing arts and crafts, making vases and all sorts of different things. So there's the other side of it, where there's a part of the brain that's now being used that never was used before. But obviously now I'm filling the time that I would have been drinking as well. Yeah, it was. It was pretty. I mean, I could laugh about some of the things I was seeing. Now, some of it, and I'm sure for the people, it was, if they can laugh about it, now I'm all right with it, and I don't mind them reminding. I don't, because it happened, didn't it? It's not going to happen again like that. Because, well, it won't get to that stage, will it? So, but yeah, it can be. There's loads of stories. I could be here all night telling you some of the stories. Some are quite funny.
But I told you Steve could talk, didn't I?
No, I'm sorry. I know.
Steve, that is meant in the nicest way.
Yeah, I think, you know, we try and examine, we really want this podcast to be a place where everyone can tell their story. And I think I'm still surprised at how surprised I can be. And I'm still learning all the time. And I don't know, I didn't think that alcohol could affect the body in the way that you've described.
It's horrific, isn't it? It is utterly horrific. That we talk, don't we, Ben and Steve, you know, about the scale of alcohol. At that top end of that scale, Steve, it's utterly horrific, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it is. I have to have a patient alert card now. So if ever I'm having another episode, because it could happen. It's extremely unlikely. If ever, God forbid, I make an accident, I have to have a patient alert card that explains to somebody that finds wherever I am what I've got, and so they know. Because if I was one of my mum family, if that happened to me, what I was seeing, because it was very fortunate, if it had been Sainsbury's or Aldi or in a pub, they'd have thought I was off my rocker. They would have thought it was on drugs or drunk or just on something, but I was so fortunate.
Steve, have you got this condition, HE, now for life?
Yes.
Do you still live with it?
I do, but what I do is I live with it, but I embrace it and don't let it. I don't. If I can see, I can spot the signs now with writing. I make notes. I have things. Like, I'm quite often going out of the house without this false tooth I've got now. That's another story. I was attacked by a butter mint. That's another story.
But, sounds brutal, yeah, no, Steve.
Yeah, yeah. I had an altercation with a butter mint that fractured my tooth.
You need so to go to those big... Chewy Werther's originals, the better for
I'm
your
not
teeth.
Having any of those.
No, come on.
Fruit gums now. Not wine gums, obviously. No, I suppose. I have a note on the door saying tooth. So I list down my job. So certain things I forget, but I just list them down. So I work with it now, and I go into other groups, or Zoom groups that are specifically for it. So you're picking up tips, but I look at what other people are doing. You have to get on with your life, because I don't want to be sat in. I spent enough time sat in here at home. So I just still do more things now than I ever did, I think.
Steve, do you feel like, even though you're still living with HE, and obviously your life is still impacted, that you've had a second chance, another shot at this?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I've had that. I know I've had a second chance. And every day when I wake up, you know, I always wake up with a smile on my face. Wake up and think, well, here I am. I'm still here. Pinch myself and think I'm still here. And yeah, I do. That's why I think, and I've always had a decent sense of humour, I think. And I think that's been probably a lot better, depends on. That's a matter of conjecture. That's what people
we'll
think.
We'll come back to that at the end of the call. Hold that thought, Steve.
I think because other people can see it, because I don't see it. I've never been one to say, oh, look at me, look how I've recovered. When I go on my walks, it's so nice. And people say, blimey, you're looking really well. Like other people. It means so much when people don't know. I was out somewhere the other week. I was in a cafe, a tea room somewhere, asking where the lights for the loo. This fella came out. I said, I'll show you. He said, I recognise you. I said, oh, I do. He said, yeah. He said, you walk past my house pretty much every day. He said, you've not got your stick now, have you? So I said, no. He said, you look so different. Because they'll have seen me struggling. And I think it's other people notice it more than I do. And that makes a real difference. That's where the confidence comes in with me, is people saying, I can't believe how you're looking now, to when you last, you know, when they last saw it. And that's what I want to sort of tell everybody else as well, is you can, if you have been through what I've been through, but you can, if you can find that inner strength, which I never thought, when I think, like I said, back to when I was 1,000 days, thinking I couldn't even go a quarter of a day. Sometimes I don't question it though, because I worry if I question things too much. I mean, I don't mind being in a room when people are drinking. It doesn't really affect me. But I don't question that. It took me well over a year to go into an environment where they were serving alcohol. Well over a year, probably even longer, actually, about 18 months, I think. But it wasn't a conscious. I had a friend that came to stay with me. We just went out and it just happened naturally. And now that doesn't bother me. It might bother some, though. That's the thing. I can only speak for me. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me going in that environment or, you know, being out with somebody who wants to have a drink. But I don't drink. And I'm fortunate in the friends that I do have. There's nobody would ever encourage me to go on. You can just have one. Right? Because they know that now they wouldn't be my friends for much longer. That's what but it's just having that courage and making that step. But I did it when I became ill. I dread to think if I had carried on drinking in December. I don't know. It's difficult. It's easy to say I wouldn't be here. I probably wouldn't be here, but I don't know. But I am here, so I'm all right. That's the thing.
believe earlier on you said that you wished that you could go back and just kind of grab hold of, you know, old you and go, you know, this is what's going to happen if you carry on this way.
Yeah.
But you also said that wouldn't have changed anything. Can I ask you, how far do you think you would have needed to have gone back to grab yourself and say, if you carry along this path? Because the reason I ask this is because I'm a really big believer that you don't have to have a rock bottom to decide to remove alcohol. Like, I don't want people to wait for a rock bottom. And it came from Desmond Tutu, died last year. One of his quotes was doing the rounds, and it was, we need to stop dragging, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially we need to stop dragging people out the river and start going upstream and finding out why they're falling in. I'm really, and I understand it's kind of sticking my neck out in a way, and I don't mean for it to be insensitive, but I wish that more people stop before it gets to the point where they can't stop. And Billy Connolly quote is another one I use all the time. I stopped drinking while it was still my idea. You know, you say that you wish you could go back, but you probably wouldn't have listened. Was there a point where he might have listened? Or do you think that it was just an inbuilt, this was your path and this was going to happen?
Yeah, in relationships that I had problems because I drank too much as well, I think. If I think back then now, because I know it's affecting my kids, I know. Not every day. I always think, oh, I know I was a good dad, but if I'd have not been the person I was in drink back then yeah. But yeah, that still pains me. I've got to be honest, and that you still got to build the trust up with your family as well. But you can see that now. I know the children are very proud. But yeah, I would say in relationships. Really, if I go back any further, which, you know, you asked me to be honest, I would say, yeah, relationships have been affected by that. But I don't know where I would have been now if I'd have still been with that person. It's difficult to say. But, yeah, if I'd have stopped then, I wouldn't have been now. If I'd have realised there was a different path that day I was driving back from the typical trail, instead of going inward, if I'd have said, right, I'll show you and I'll get myself a good job or a better job or go, you know, if I was doing then what I'm doing now, getting my CV ready, getting out to various different companies in the same trade that I was in, if I'd done that then, we wouldn't be talking now, would we? But yeah, there's lots of instances, you know, being honest. Yeah, there are. I think relationships, when those are affected, it should have made me realise then, but it didn't. It didn't. And I think living on my own is too easy. It was too easy for me. If I'd have been with a partner here, but I'd have probably hidden it as well. I used to hide it from my mum when she came up. You know, because you become very clever. You become really, really clever in finding a way when someone's here, because you still need that fix. You still need that drink. And so, you know, I might be going to the bedroom or saying going to bed, knowing there'll be a box of wine under the bed. Awful to say it now, but I may as well say that because there might be somebody listening in that's doing the same thing that I don't want them to get to. I don't want anyone ever, ever to get to the stage where I was, where it could. I'm not saying it will, but it you know, I was literally days away. From losing my life. And that is what nobody's mum or child should be told. Their daddy, their son is going to die. And that is how it was. And it's really sad. It upsets me. Of course it does. It's horrendous. I hid away for so long. I hid my feelings and certainly hid my drinking for so long. I don't want to hide anymore. And I know there were people hiding away now, whether it be secret drinking or doing what I was doing at home. And I just want to say to them, don't, because I've never felt as good as I do now. Even before I was ill, I feel sharper. When my mum is saying to me, I've got my son back, and when my daughter's saying to me, Dad, you're back to your old self, that means more to them, first and foremost, and more to me as well. It means a lot to me. And I'm making new friends. I've never met so many new people because I'm not, you know, and I think people like that because we're having a good laugh. And nobody, the people I meet as well, the groups I've become involved with, the British Liver Trust, the stories outside, nobody judges me. And that's a massive thing for me. they don't stigmatize me. I know the stigma, I've had it, but I'll do whatever I can to reduce the stigma and to reduce the amount of people that get to where I did.
Steve, thank you so much. I knew it would be a brilliant chat, and it's gone so quickly. We are out of time.
I know I've gone on too much. I'm so sorry.
It's like this, isn't it? I think it's a like Garstang thing. Does anyone get anything done in Garstang, or do you just constantly chat to each other all day, every day?
If I ever bump into Steve in the street, guarantee it's like an hour before I get home. How are you doing? How are you going? What are you up to?
Well, thanks for coming. Well, you know now. That's it now. I'm not speaking to you anymore. Finish. I'm going to walk across the road. I'm going to social distance now.
Yeah, you're going to be avoiding me now. Steve, before you go, you've shared a very private, personal, but inspirational story. Thank you so much. We've got a load of comments from the community members that are watching, and they just echo that. And there's a lot of thanks there. So thank you, Steve, for your honesty. Very quickly want to mention the work you do with the British Liver Trust. Yeah. We've not had time to touch on that. They are an incredible organisation. I know you are really active with them as a volunteer now, which is brilliant. So if you want to find out more about the work of the British Liver Trust, you can look them up on social media. Chances are Steve's there, flying the flag, just doing brilliant things. The other thing Steve does, I just want to... direct you to his Twitter account. Steve, it's the stuff of nightmares, this. Right, so Steve likes to tweet jokes, okay? They're awful. They're awful. This is hashtag Monday Mirth, okay?
Monday Mirth. Which one?
I'm going to read it out, Steve. I don't care. I'm going there.
I see there's three on today. They've gone down.
None of them are funny. Just wait, Steve.
She's absolutely slating you, isn't she?
Slating him.
You okay?
Hello, I'm not going to speak to her for
again. Actually, I'm going to read you this one because it's a bit of mirth here, a bit of mirth. The drummer from my band has just left to go to a rival. There will definitely be repercussions.
See, that's my kind of joke. And maybe it's because I've just become a dad, but I love that. I understand that joke and why it's funny.
You need the hot chocolate one. That's my favourite. That's my.
Oh, here we go. I haven't read this one, Steve. Are you ready for this, man? I did say we're out of time, but this is very important. Last night, I was at a fantastic buffet hosted by the 70s and 80s pop band Hot Chocolate. It started with a quiche.
That is my. What do we follow here, Steve? I'm in. You've got me.
It started with a quiche.
At Arty 566.
At Arty
566.
It started with a quiche.
Follow.
Tomorrow is.
Can I just do one more?
Go on then.
This is really good, Steve. Are you ready? Right, Benny, ready?
Go on.
I was in Asda yesterday. And for no reason, a fella started shouting very angrily. And several times, the letters A, E, I, O, U. I think he must have irritable vowel syndrome.
We've ended on a low. We've ended on a low.
You know what I used to say to people? Blame. It's very good because I always say blame the condition. Blame the condition.
You can't blame that on anything, Steve Rodriguez.
I know.
Oh, man. Look at this now. We've lost Ben in a Stevie R rabbit hole of jokes here.
Look at this. I'm literally going back through. And, please do follow at RT566 if you are a dad and like a joke.
On that note, we need to wrap this up. Steve Rodriguez.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your company on the podcast today. Thank you for sharing your story. It's been really, really inspirational. Less jokes, more inspiring stories, please. Steve, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I don't know if to thank Steve or apologise, Ben, for those horrendously bad jokes.
He loved them. You know you did.
I did.
Follow him. I've been getting him every day since.
You know what? I do too. Just brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. I really enjoyed that chat with Steve. I know we said it to him on the pod, and I'll say it to him when I see him out and about. Just thank you for your honesty. Your honesty could well be what somebody else needs to hear if they're finding themselves in the situation that Steve was in. So, Steve, thank you. It was a great chat. And as we said, we're really gutted. We ran out of time and didn't get much time at all to talk about Steve's volunteering work with the British Liver Trust. I know Steve is heavily involved with the work they do. He attends their Love Their Liver roadshows. He's now an ambassador. He speaks on behalf of the organisation. He's doing brilliant things, and I know he thinks very, very highly of everybody that has been involved with him and his journey with the British Liver Trust. Just a quick reminder about where you can get all their info. Ben, it's all over social media, British Liver Trust, and there's a website as well. Are you looking at that now as we speak?
Yeah, you know what? I am. BritishLiverTrust.org.uk. And there's a little drop-down bit, like the top menu, it says information and support, and then liver conditions. I didn't realise just how many different liver conditions there are, to the point where they have to separate them A to D, E to H, I to L. Because obviously Steve was talking about his HE, but I'm looking at A to D, alcohol-related liver disease, ARLD. But then you've also got like cryptogenic liver disease, Gilbert syndrome. These are things I don't know about at all. And, you know, a lot of these might be nothing to do with alcohol, but as we've heard from Steve in this episode, it wasn't any other underlying health conditions. You know, this was alcohol. And I think it's just amazing that he's now speaking so openly about it. And yeah, Chaz, like you said earlier, who knows, this episode could help. What a great guy. If next time you bump into him in Garstang and you have a chat for about 3.5 hours in a queue for Sainsbury's or whatever. Because honestly, I swear that no one gets anything done in Garstang. It must just be chat, chat, chat. It's like when I went to Canada, went to a drive-through Tim Hortons, you know, their kind of coffee and donut place.
Yeah.
And we're sitting in this queue by Niagara Falls Tim Hortons thinking, why is this taking so bloody long? And we get to the front, it's because of the Canadian woman in the window. Hey, how are you? How's your day going? Enjoy the falls?
I love her already.
I'm just like, yeah, I'll have it. I'll have a coffee, please. But it's just chat, 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 chat. I imagine it's the same thing in
Garstang. It's exactly the same thing. And
When you see him, say thanks for me as well.
I will. Absolutely. Inspirational episode. Thank you, Steve. Same time next week with Over the Influence.
See you then.